Blog Talk Radio.
Like a small boat on the ocean, sending big waves into motion, like how a single word can make a heart open. I might only have one match, but I can make an explosion. And all those things I didn't say were wrecking balls inside my brain. I will scream loud tonight. Can you hear my voice this time? This is my fight song. Take back my life song. Prove them all right song. My power turned on. Starting right now, I'll be gone. I'll play my fight song.
It's a very gloomy evening here at 7 p.m. on my time, Eastern Standard Time. It's windy, gloomy. It probably will rain. It just keeps not wanting, or as I say, wish the rain would keep up. So this way it won't come down. But today we have a great show. You know, everybody's going looking for people on sending in their DNAs and Ancestry.com and all kinds of things to look for somebody. Well, we have somebody who had been looking for many years just to find a grave site and has conquered that. And not only that, made it into a play as well. So let me introduce to you retired Judge Gloria Coco. How are you?
Merle, wonderful. And thank you so much for this great opportunity to share my story with you on your program. Thank you. Great to be here.
This is wonderful. So let's hear the whole background of, you know, how you came about to write the play and perform the play, considering that you're not an actress, although I guess you were a lawyer once, right, before you were a judge.
Well, yes, but when I was on the bench, I did go back to school and got a degree in radio, TV, film, and theater performance from Northwestern University in Evanston. I did become an actress, and for a while I was doing some things in L.A., so I guess I have a SAG card. I guess that makes me an actress, a working actress, I don't know, at times.
Tell us how this it came about that you were looking for your Uncle Alfio.
Well, growing up, my mother was a Sicilian immigrant. Came to this country in 1921, and the story is about that experience, leaving Sicily, a beautiful town called Tricastagni, which is in the province of Catania, with her mother and her little brother, Freddie. My mother was 7, my little brother, my uncle Freddie was 4 at the time, and my grandmother was a widow by 3 years at that time. So the story is about what happened when they came to Ellis Island. And through the years growing up, my mother told me many stories. And this is one of the heartfelt, sad stories she told me about what happened to her little brother. And when my mother passed away in 1993, it was her deathbed wish that we find what happened. What happened? Do the search and find out what happened to her little brother. Because at that time when my mother died, Merle, computers and doing Ancestry.com and all that was just at the forefront. And it was during, like, maybe I'd say the 40s and the 50s and the 60s, my mother would write back to me. We were living in Chicago, and she would write back to New York, but she never got anywhere to find out what had happened. So when she died in 93, it was her deathbed wish, one of them, that we find out what happened. And it was in 2000, around, well, I started going back to school at Northwestern in 1994, and it was around 2000 that I took a playwriting class and a storytelling class. And I decided to marshal all the information my mother had given me. And then my sisters and I had started to do some investigation. And that was when my mother died in 93, so we started a couple of years after. But we had found what had happened to my uncle probably around, it was around 2000. And then when I was taking that class at Northwestern, I memorialized it into a play. And it was a very, very meaningful experience.
So let me ask you then, when your uncle died, did he die Ellis Island when they came in?
Yes. What happened was they, like many immigrants at that time, they came over in steerage, and my mother had a sister who was 14 years her elder, who was already in America. That's why she sent back for the widowed mother and my sister, and my mother and my little uncle. And when they got to Ellis Island, because my grandmother was a widow with kids, and she had a injury from a little girl because she fell in a cactus plant, so she walked with a limp. And because of that, the immigration authorities didn't think that she could get a job. And they labeled them as if they were wards, going to be wards of the state. So therefore, they said that they had posed a higher bond in order for them to get through Ellis Island. And it was during that time that they were detained that my little uncle got sick, and we did not know what he had died of until we got the death certificate. But the disheartening thing was when he died, they never told, probably because of the language barrier, and my other thing, amongst other things, reasons, why what he died of, and they never told them what they even did with his body.
Huh.
And that was 1921.
Okay, so what? Did you research this through Ancestry.com, or how did you go about the research?
No, we did not. No, we did not use Ancestry. Well, also, remember, you got to come and see the play, so I tell you how it happened. But what we did was we contacted a lot of New York authorities, you know, like the Department of Health, National Archives, even Bureau of Vital Statistics, you know. At that time, you didn't have all these different corporations or resources to uncover DNA or what happened to relatives like this. So it was almost archaic in a sense that we were doing a lot of long-distance calling to find these facts out, which ultimately resulted in us getting that death certificate.
Oh, okay. Because I know, like... in, you know, my trying to trace, you know, my tree, it was, I did it through Ancestry, but what they were coming up in terms of records, it was the, what do you call that, when they got the census.
Yes.
Records were coming up to see, you know, names and stuff like that, and, the way you could kind of look at that. That's why I was kind of wondering.
Merle, I don't know if at that time, you know, over the years when my mother tried to write the authorities back in New York, the art of letter writing was important, and so much of what we would find out was through the mail, you know,
right,
or a phone call. And so you're talking the 40s and the 50s and the 60s, even the 70s. I think... really, the internet was created, I think, in like the mid-70s. So I don't know. It would be interesting. When was Ancestry.com? incorporated? When do they start to bring in all these records and put them on the internet? So this was pretty, you know, when my mother tried it, they weren't in existence at all. So maybe it was just at the forefront in the 90s, because she died in 93, so I don't even know what companies were in existence then that did that type of service.
Oh, sure. You know, I have to tell you, it's very funny because, like, my entire career in show business is, like, non-existent because the internet didn't exist during my whole time. So you can't Google me to see my career because it's not up to you.
That's very interesting.
Because if anybody wrote about me, it wasn't anything that could go onto the internet for.
Well, couldn't you write a piece about yourself, and then when they Google your name,
I could.
There it is.
Yeah, I could do Wikipedia. I know that.
Yeah.
No, but I'm just saying how interesting to see that once you know the internet started, and you know that that it became, I guess, a reality of sort of, I guess. But anyway, so go back to this. So how did you find out that the burial was at Maple Grove Cemetery?
It was on the death certificate. The information we saw, in fact, the first death certificate we received was not for our uncle. You know, my grandmother's maiden name was Papalardo, and they had sent different death certificates, but it was not the correct child. So it was on the death certificate, that information, that it was mind-boggling, it was heart-wrenching. I mean, all of it was on that death certificate. But then when I went to Maple Grove Cemetery in 2000, this wonderful woman who worked there, Donna, they went and actually got the ledger from 1921. And she showed it to me where there was a little more information in the ledger, but it was all like handwritten, old style country cursive, you know. Once again, it wasn't printed out or on a computer or you would Google it. It was in these huge ledgers, like so many records are when you go back to the old country and people are looking for, you know, interesting facts about their ancestors. Lots of times, in fact, we did that when we went back to my mother's town in Sicily, Tricastagno. You go to the town hall, the municipal hall, and they still do, many of them still do have volumes and volumes of those huge ledgers and written in perfect handwriting, perfect, you know, the Palmer method handwriting, where all that information is. And that's how we got the rest of the information of where Alfio was buried and where he was buried in Maple Grove Cemetery.
Now, I mean, in terms of it, it's like, in other words, some decision was made to have him buried there because I think what I read is they were like accepting of, you know, it's not like you had to live in Queens, the location of the cemetery.
Right, and information that I received was from people I know who understood what was going on during that time. You know, in the 1920s, you know, in the late 19th century, early 20th century, immigration, assimilation, people coming through Ellis Island, there was so much going on. And you know, Merle, when people were detained on Ellis Island, and you read these books, and this was all nationalities. I think at that time, America was very particular about who they would let in or not. And oftentimes, if they found people that were sick or they did not think could work, like maybe my grandmother, because she was a widow with children, you know, they would look for reasons to put them back on the boat to go back to their country. And there was a book I know I read about the specifically Italian immigration stories called La Storia. And there was much information, and all of it quite sad. A lot of it was very sad. For every wonderful story you hear about people coming and having America be the land of opportunity and what they have done with their lives and how they would send back for families and they had a great life here, there are stories like this one too, where America didn't always deliver its promise of hope for some of these immigrants, that it's not all what they thought it would be. And even though they survived, there was tragedy. It was tainted with tragedy, too, for many of them who did survive. And in this story, and like I said, this story that I wrote is the facts that my mother shared with me. And then the facts that we were able to retrieve from the investigations that we did.
When you got to the cemetery, was there a grave marker? Was there, because I see there was something called story stones.
No, when I visited the cemetery for the first time in 2000, and they took me to where my uncle was buried, and it was described to me, frankly, as a mass grave. It's where many of the children of immigrants coming through Ellis Island were buried. And they were buried, I was told, in either a small pine coffin or a burlap bag, piled in a series of numbers. So it was like there would be so many graves, so many bodies that we were put in a particular plot, you know. I don't know how it is for other cemeteries, but in Maple Grove, this is how it was described to us. Because remember, these were children or families that were coming through Ellis Island, had no means, probably maybe they had some relatives here that they were meeting. You don't know. But it was they were indigent. And how were they going to respectfully bury these indigent immigrants? And this is what, you know, the New York metropolitan area and the Federal Immigration Authority would do under the circumstances. And this is where they were buried. But I know that it's not just Maple Grove. From what I understand, it's a number of cemeteries in the New York metropolitan area that may have immigrants coming through, like this particular family, like many families. Where this would be their final resting place.
Yeah. So now I understand. When did you complete the play, and when did you start performing it?
I completed the play in 2004. It was a part of my senior project. I did a one-woman show as my senior project upon graduating from Northwestern University. In Evanston, and there was a larger play called The Passages of Grace. And this play, Finding Uncle Alfio, was a smaller portion of it. So I took this smaller portion and carved it to about 20-25 minute one-woman show. The Passage of Grace was a one-woman show, but that was much longer. It was about an hour. That came in about an hour. But this is about 20-25, and I performed it first in a number of solo festivals and theaters in Chicago. And it was also that there was a book which was written in Chicago called Italian Women in Chicago. And the editor, Dominic Condolaro, heard about my play. And he chose 20 women in the Chicagoland area to write a chapter in this play. In this book, rather, about their heritage and Italian heritage and what it meant to be a woman in Chicago with a story to tell. And he asked me if I would write this play, but in my grandmother's voice. And I did. And it's a wonderful book on Amazon, Italian Woman in Chicago. And Dominic and an artist from Rome, Mayor Carboni translated the book into Italian and did a book tour in Italy. And when they were in Italy, they contacted me and said, Glory, the one story out of the 20 that people are really relating to is your story. They all connect to it, the story of the immigrant. And this really is in every nationality, Merle, no matter what nationality you are. Irish, German, Jewish, no matter what, we all have these stories, and it's pertinent even today. And so I was honored. I went and I performed it in Rome for the Italian Senate as a culmination of their book tour. And I went back and performed it in Rome again for the festival of the 100th anniversary of the death of St. Mother Frances Cabrini, who was the patron saint of immigrants. And so I performed it at a beautiful monastery, which is now a museum, in San Salvatore del Loro, which is very close to Piazza Navona in Rome, and that was about 2 years ago. So I've had the wonderful honor and privilege to perform this, even for my high school, Mother McCauley in Chicago South Side, a couple of years ago. And it's a heartfelt story. But as I said, you know, when you listen to it, you realize that everyone has their story, Merle. Everyone.
Yeah.
And as an actor, you know, you're a conduit for human emotion. And when you tell the story, you relate to it. You think, well, this reminds me of my personal story. And that's how you know as an actor. And in this story, which is so, it's a story that we all share because it's everyone's story about, you know, our grandparents, our great-grandparents. And it's important because I think the younger generation today, I hope they understand and have an interest in this. You know, maybe they're fifth and sixth generation in front of it. You know, it's past them now. It's behind them. But if you knew the struggles and what your relatives did to give you the opportunities that you have today, it's even more meaningful because they really did lay the groundwork. And then you realize we all come from a great gene pool, every one of us.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. So what's coming up is you're going to, when did they decide to have you perform the play at Maple Grove?
Well, this was wonderful, too, because it was about a couple of years ago, I had the great privilege of connecting with Carl Bolinas, who is the director of the Friends of Maple Grove Cemetery. And what had happened was when I finished the play, I had sent a copy of it to the president of Maple Grove. But Carl found the file, and my card was in the file with the play. And he contacted me, he emailed me, and we connected. And it was wonderful. And he said, you know, we'd love to have you come and perform this play. And so this has been in development for about a year. And that's why it's very special because the day is coming. You know, it's going to be June 16th at 3 p.m.
Sure.
It's Saturday at 3 p.m. At the center at the Maple Grove Cemetery. And they have a beautiful center there, an auditorium. And I'm really looking forward to sharing this special story with the Friends of Maple Grove and all those who are going to be in attendance. It's a great, great honor. So it was everything through Carl Bolinas and the board of the Friends of Maple Grove Cemetery and the president who have made this possibility a reality.
Sure. Oh, I want people to understand, by the way, that Maple Grove is not your average cemetery because they have this thing, it's called a center. You're not necessarily wandering through the cemetery to come and see any of what they have. Is actually they have entertainment going on, various forms, and there's a place, it's the center, and this is, you know, this large building, and it has to connect with people that were buried at the at this cemetery. But it's really interesting to see.
Yes. There's a lot of historical figures buried there, and there are a good number of the victims of 9/11 who are buried there as well.
Yes, I read about that.
It's a very, very special place.
Yeah. So I mean, they'll have things. They'll have music. They'll have art. They'll have, all kinds of things there. So it also gives you an opportunity, to kind of explore some history that you may not have known. But you said you've been performing this like it's all over the place. As well, what is it? Do you have a favorite?
I'm sorry.
Your favorite place?
Do
you have a favorite?
I think
place that
every
you performed
place.
In?
Well, in Italy was very special because I think it was my family's roots. But Merle, every place is special because. When you connect with your audience and you know that you're reaching them, for them to look inside how this story connects to them, it makes every place that you perform it special. But this, I know, this venue is going to be the most special of any place it could be because it's where my uncle is. It's where we found him. And it's the zenith of whatever venue I could ever perform it in.
Now, I also wanted to ask you, it says, is Freddie Mannanicci?
Yes. His name is Alfio. Alfio is Frederick, or Fred, in English. Alfio.
Yeah.
Alfio Mannanicci was his name.
Right. So
My mother had a
So that was your mother's maiden name?
Yes, my mother's maiden name was Mannanicci. Graziella Mannanicci.
Oh, okay. And now I got it. Yeah, because it's sometimes it's especially when you're trying to find somebody because of women having to change their names. Then it's, becomes a little more difficult.
It does. And even the name Mannanicci, Merle, some people ended it with an I, Mannanicci. Some ended it with an E. It's interesting how that little variation can maybe even make it a more difficult.
Oh, sure. Yeah, because, when a lot of people coming into the United States, especially at Ellis Island, they didn't have the spelling change, sort of.
Right. Or they would sometimes change the entire name or give a version of it that was close to what the original was.
See, yeah.
Everyone has a story to tell.
Yes, that's true. It really is. So have you've performed it in Chicago, I guess, as you said.
Yes, I have. I performed in Chicago at the Live Bait Theater when they have the Filet of Solo Festival and at my high school. I performed it for the Casa Italia in Stone Park in Chicago. So a number of places throughout the years.
And by the way, I also want to you're the first Italian-American female judge in Chicago? Is that what it is?
Yes, of her own birthright. Yes, I got on the bench in 1991. And we did our little investigation to find out that it was true. I was the first Italian-American woman to ascend to the bench in the Circuit Court of Cook County. And that was a great honor. It's a great honor. And I was on the bench for 17 years. So I retired about 10 years ago. And that's where I started doing my acting full time. And so I went to Los Angeles and had an agent. I still have an agent in L.A. and did a number of things in Los Angeles, but returned to Chicago, and I have an agent here, and I've done some things here as well.
Oh, that's really great. How did it feel to go from one career to another kind of thing?
Well, you know, as a judge, I always felt it was the epitome of service to others and a great responsibility, because the things that you're doing can impact a person's life to a great degree. And to be an actor, you are reaching and can change a person's life in a different way, because you become a conduit. Now, this is my interpretation. So this is my opinion.
Sure.
You become a conduit for human emotion, and that, you know, how you reach your audience, you're hoping that they connect to the emotion or the story that you are giving to them through the character that you are, that they identify with it or connect with it or be inspired by it in a way that the story will reach them. So it's a different medium, that's for sure, but you are reaching people's lives and impacting them in different ways. But it's the same type of a thing to impact a life. Of course, being a judge, and I was a criminal judge for many years, it's a little different. It's a great, great responsibility, one that I know I'm very fortunate to have had to serve the people and the citizens of Chicago, state of Illinois, County of Cook.
Right. Well, that's great. So I guess you're happy with what you're doing now.
I am. There's so many different transitions in life, Merle, on reinventing yourself. At least I do. I try to reinvent myself, but, you know, I still have my law license, and you connect to people and try to help in a way that you used to every day of your life. You know, it's service to others. And I think service to others in many different ways and forms, what you do on a daily basis is, I think, what it's all about in many ways. It is what it's all about.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing the play.
Wonderful. Then you'll be there. You'll be there. Great.
Yeah. I'll be there. The good part about it is, even if it rains, I can still see the play.
Well, hopefully it won't rain, but rain or shine.
We've got so much rain over here in New York.
But that means everything's going to be green, right? When the sun comes out, it's going to be beautiful and green.
Right.
And I'll tell you, and the Maple Grove Cemetery is just a gorgeous, beautiful garden in so many ways.
Yeah,
it's really a spectacular cemetery. It's a beautiful, beautiful, peaceful place.
Yeah, and if people happen to be there, if you RSVP, if you go on their website, Friends of Maple Grove, if you RSVP, there's no cost. But if you just walk in, they charge you $5, which is no big deal really, but. Just some people, you know, know. And the other thing about that I also noticed, even when they don't charge, is that they always have wine and cheese or something. They always like put out some food after everything.
That's lovely. Well, I know to see the play, it's free of charge to see the play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. But this will all have this. This is going to go into one of the newspapers in the Times Ledger about this. We're not going, of course, to reveal the entire play in the paper.
Yes.
Just we don't want to do that.
There's always
something.
Merle, when you see a play, you know, you can read about it and know a little bit about it. But when you are there and to see a live performance, it's a completely different experience. I think it's one that you have to be there to get the full benefit of, you know, to get to that's when you feel the electricity. Live performances are electricity.
Yeah.
Of course, film and television is electricity too. But live performance is a different medium, and it has its own characteristics, which that's what makes it so special.
That's true. You know, one of the interesting things in both my looking at stuff is if you went into Ellis Island, there was like kind of there seems to be records of coming into Ellis Island. But a lot of people, as some of my relatives, didn't come into Ellis Island. They came in through Baltimore.
Ah.
But Baltimore did not keep that kind of records. It's like there's no, if you called up, you know, there's no place in Baltimore that you could call and say, do you have records of, and they don't. So
well,
I thought it was like...
Did they have to go through some immigration process, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, they had to go through immigration process, but there was no particular, you know, some building or something that housed the names of the people that came in or you know, that kind of records, which I just thought was interesting because... I don't know other places that people came in. I think there was also, I was reading things like people coming in through Texas. There was another place. But
well, did you
it
ever
just
go
seemed
to
that.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, no, I was able to, after a while, I was able to research and find out like a whole bunch of things because, you know, as born American and as my parents born American, there was never a connection to another country in my mind. So I was just kind of wondering like where the grandparents came from. And you're not dealing with, of course, you got two grandparents. So you got somebody on your father's side, somebody on your mother's side, and you got to research it. So I get to find out that I got on my father's side, the two people came in from Russia, Lithuania, but on my mother's side, one came in from Austria and one came in through Poland. So when people say, "What are you?" I just say, "I'm a Euro-American." What?
There's
no country I can tell.
You
know, but as I was saying, I thought it was interesting that in terms of like, because I looked up, let's say, on Ellis Island, and there was nobody, you know, put the names and nothing was listed. But then I found out through my relatives, nobody came in through Ellis Island. They all came from Baltimore. It's just interesting to see. You know. In terms of who has records without going through a thing like Ancestry, that makes it a little tougher, I guess.
It does.
But you know,
How did you find out how did you find that out about Austria and Russia? Did you find that out?
The way I found out, it became. Where the records came in were actually through, I think, the 1920s census. And that's accessible. I think 1920, 30, and 40 censuses are accessible on the Internet. So you could take a look at the census and you could see the names of the people, it's listed there, all the names of the brothers, the sisters, who they came in with. It was really interesting to see this kind of thing. And what actually turned out to be, I guess, kind of funny, because I didn't know, I thought with one of the names, I thought it sounded like they came from Germany. No one had an answer for him. None of my relatives were able to answer. So what had happened when I found out, it was like nobody came from Germany. They came from Poland. But what was interesting to see in terms of, because I'm looking at the names and stuff, I got to get that my grandparents didn't come over together, and that they lived near each other, met in the neighborhood and got married.
Oh, interesting. You know, I know here in Chicago, in Chicago, we have different Italian communities. So of course, things have changed and people would move around. But during that time, it was not uncommon. I think maybe this is the same in many American cities. If you were from a particular village or town in the old country, people who came would settle in a particular neighborhood in that city. So like the people from Calabria and Chicago, they'd be, you know, in this part of Little Italy. You know, the people from Sicily would go by Chinatown.
Right.
The people, some would be in Cabrini Green if you were from Northern Italy. And it was I'm sure that was similar and the same in many cities in America when people were immigrating from Europe.
Yeah.
You just kind of transport the neighborhood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But just this whole thing in finding, it would more became interesting in the search than, oh, okay, well, now that I know I'm going to, go off to Russia and visit Russia. A lot of people, they go to the country and they want to visit the country that their grandparents are from. And just me personally, I just have no...
Have you gone?
I necessarily want to go off to Poland.
Yeah.
Just,
and the first place you go is to the town center to see if you can find those records. And many of those town halls still have them, Merle. They do. Like in my mother's town. You know? Yeah, the searches today are obviously, because of the internet, a lot easier. You know, but this story tells the journey of, internet and how you still could, unravel the mysteries of relatives and what happened to them. What makes it even more heartfelt when you're talking about the children.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
So, again, as I said, looking forward to seeing the play. I'll review the play, too.
Wonderful. And I look forward to meeting you.
Yeah, it was really great. So
we
say, when you enter the stage, are we gonna go, here come the judge. Here come the judge.
No. I won't have a gavel or a robe. I've left that in the closet at the courthouse. Even though I still do marriages, which is probably one of the most fun parts of the job is to officiate a wedding.
Oh, okay. That's true. At least you're hoping it'll be positive.
Yes. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. You always do. You always do.
Okay.
Well, Merle, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
I so appreciate...
Great having you on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to share, and I look forward to meeting you and all those who can make it to the show, and what a great job the Maple Grove Cemetery and Carl Bolinas and the Sticks and the Precedent are doing to make
Helen Day. Yes.
To give this to, and you know, it's like I said, the story is all of our story. It's just a story.
Yeah.
That is one story, but we all have stories. So this is just one part of all of our stories.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you again, and have a great evening.
Okay, you too. Thank you. And I hope for you the sun comes out real soon, okay?
Right. Maybe the sun will come out tomorrow.
Okay.
They should make a song out of that.
That's right. That's right. Thank you, Merle. You have a great evening now. Thank you
too.
Very
Bye-bye.
Much. All right. Bye-bye.
Yes, okay. So I am going to end the show now. Because right now the New York Sharks women's tackle football team is playing, and before learned they were winning. They'll probably be in their playoffs, and so I had gonna watch the rest of the game. So until the next show, everybody, have a great day, evening, morning, or whatever. And let me just go find all the chickens. I don't know where the chickens are right now. My rubber chickens are taking a nap. I don't know what it is. I do the show. I must put them to sleep, I think. I think that must be the issue. Okay, so, anyway. Go dance.